nötig.
Ya Pancha Hayano Matra Pratar Asaya Yachita Tan Naichad Rochayan Rachayan Yasya Saparyam Bala Lilaya Ya Pancha Hayano Matra Pratar Asaya Yachitaha Tanaichad Rachayan Yasya Sarpayam Balalilaya Yapancha Hayano Matra Pratar Asaya Yachitaha Tanaichad Rachayan Yasya Saparyam Balalilaya Yapancha Hayano Matra Pratar Asaya Yachitaha Tanaichad Rachayan Yasya Sarpayam Balalilaya
Vaishnavis.
Ya, one who, pancha,
five,
hyena, years old, matra,
by his mother,
prata asaya,
for breakfast,
yachitaha,
called for, tat, that,
na,
not,
aichat,
light,
rachayan,
playing.
Yasya,
whose.
Saparyam,
service.
Balalilaya,
childhood. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Sukadeva Goswami speaking. He says, he was one, referring to Uddhava, he was one who even in his childhood, at the age of 5 years, was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna that when he was called by his mother for morning breakfast, he did not wish to have it. Actually, did I read the translation to the first one? I did. Okay, sorry. Purport. From his very birth, Uddhava was a natural devotee of Lord Krishna, or Nityasiddha, a liberated soul. From natural instinct, he used to serve Lord Krishna, even in his childhood. He used to play with dolls in the form of Krishna. He would serve the dolls by dressing, feeding, and worshipping them, and thus he was constantly absorbed in the play of transcendental realization. These are the signs of an eternally liberated soul. An eternally liberated soul is a devotee of the Lord who never forgets Him. Human life is meant for reviving one's eternal relation with the Lord, and all religious injunctions are meant for awakening this dormant instinct of the living entity. The sooner this awakening is brought about, the quicker the mission of human life is fulfilled. In a good family of devotees, the child gets the opportunity to serve the Lord in many ways. A soul who is already advanced in devotional service has the opportunity to take birth in such an enlightened family. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashta Bhajayate. Even the fallen devotees get the opportunity to take his birth. Even the fallen devotee gets his opportunity to take his birth in the family of a well-situated Brahmin or in a rich, well-to-do mercantile family. In both these families, there is good opportunity to revive one's sense of God consciousness automatically, because particularly in these families, the worship of Lord Krishna is regularly performed, and the child gets the opportunity to imitate the process of worship called archana. The Pancharatriki formula for training persons in devotional services, temple worship, whereby the neophyte devotee gets the opportunity to learn devotional service to the Lord. Maharaj Prickett also used to play with Krishna dolls in his childhood. In India, the children in good families are still given dolls of the Lord, like Rama and Krishna, or sometimes the demigods, so that they may develop the aptitude of service to the Lord. By the grace of the Lord, we were given the same opportunity by our parents, and the beginning of our life was based on this principle. Omagina timinam dashajanam jana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam. So I apologize for the abbreviated Jairata Madhava and Premadvani prayers, but the kirtan went over, which is okay, but it's like self-defense, you know. Our speakers have to protect our turf here. So, and I hope nobody was embarrassed by that little bit of confusion in the beginning there. I hope I didn't embarrass anybody anyway. So, translation. This is Sukadeva Goswami speaking, and he's making the point that Uddhava, when he was 5 years old, he was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna that even when his mother called him for morning breakfast, he did not wish to have it. So Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning this, so obviously it's something significant. It's, you know, significant for anybody to miss breakfast, be so absorbed in something to miss breakfast. Well, particularly a five-year-old child, because, you know, generally five-year-old children aren't prone to austerities. You know, they like to eat breakfast. So he's pointing it out. It's significant that even at 5 years old, when most kids would want to stop and eat breakfast, he was so absorbed in his worship that he didn't even think about that. So while I'm remembering, today is the disappearance day of Jiva Goswami. Right. So one of the things that the Goswamis were, one of their achievements on a personal level was Sankhya Purva Ganamagana Natibi Kala Vasani Krito Nidra Hada Ahada Kari Vijito Katyanta Dino Chayo Radha Krishna Gunasmritir Madhuriman Nandena Samhavito Bande Rupa Sanatana Ruguya Go Shijiva Gopala Go. So they were so much, they were engaged in devotional service in a very regulated way. Chanting, very regulated, and bowing down, offering obeisances. And by doing that, they conquered over eating and sleeping. So it's not an easy thing. You know, that was one of their achievements. conquered overeating and sleeping. So Jiva Goswami in particular, he was the youngest of the six Goswamis, and he's considered, he was the most prolific, means he wrote the most books, and he was considered the most systematic preacher of the six Goswamis. He actually did a lot of work to form a movement, whereas prior to that, there was, you know, the bhajan was going on, Rupa Goswami and the other Goswamis made their contributions, but Jiva Goswami actually formulated things into a movement, and he was actually the first Sankirtan book distribution party leader, because he sent out Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Goswami, and Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya actually is the author, was his disciple, if I'm remembering correctly, and he was the author of that song that I just quoted that verse from. So he gets credit for that. And there's a lot of anecdotes, you know, stories with Jiva Goswami. We know many of them. Maybe at the end, if we have time, we could kind of, you know, go over some of those. But Jiva Goswami ki jai. So, and the purport Prabhupada says, he's talking about how Uddhava was a natural devotee of Lord Krishna, a nitya siddha. And he describes a little bit about that. Now, so the question comes to my mind, well, if he's a nitya siddha, you know, means he's a liberated soul, Prabhupada says that, not forgetting Krishna at any time, what's he doing here in the material world? What's a nitya siddha? What's a nitya siddha doing here in the material world? Right? Doesn't make any sense. Well, I mean, it does make sense, but you know, on one level it doesn't make any sense because you think, well, you know, if somebody's a nitya siddha, they're liberated, they're always remembering Krishna, they're never forgetting Krishna, why are they here in the material world? They should be in the spiritual world. So, at least the answer that I came up with when I asked myself that question this morning when I was, you know, reading the purport and preparing for the class was that this, that Krishna comes to the material world. He's coming here to do something, you know, for some purpose. See? So there's two reasons. One is the devotees, the nitya siddhas, they're always wanting to serve Krishna. So here's an analogy, okay? Say Prabhupada, imagine you're back, it's 1975. Okay, and you're all in the movement here. We're all devotees of 1975. And you haven't been instructed that, you know, to stay in your temple no matter what and just continue with your service. And you hear that Prabhupada's going to wherever, you know, going to China to preach. Okay? So, and you haven't been told to stay in your temple. And you know, okay, that could be difficult. What would your inclination be? You'd be thinking, wow, Prabhupada's going to China? I'd like to go, because everybody always wanted to be around Prabhupada. Wherever Prabhupada went, if devotees were allowed to, they would immediately, you know, gravitate to that place. If there was a Ratha Yatra and Prabhupada was going to be there, right? Everybody, okay, here we go. We're, you know, they drive across the country. Because people like to be, devotees like to be around Prabhupada. And also they wanted to serve Prabhupada. They wanted to be there wherever Prabhupada was. And they wanted to, they looked forward to the opportunity to do some service to Prabhupada. See, so it's the same thing. Nitya-siddha devotees, they want to be around Krishna. They want to be around Lord Chaitanya. And they want to do some service. They want to do something to please him, to assist him, like that. You see? So, that's why the nitya siddha devotees come here to this material world to assist Krishna in his pastimes. See? It's not like they don't really have to come here. They're qualified to be, because they're liberated, they're qualified to be in the spiritual world, but it's out of, like, love that they want to come here. They want to be where Krishna is. They want to help Krishna do whatever he's trying to do in the material world. See? So they come. Now, Krishna, on the other side, Krishna doesn't need their company. I mean, in the sense that he's okay. Krishna's blissful on his own, you know. And Krishna doesn't need their help to do anything. I mean, there's one purport in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, I think it's text, in the purport to text 5, where Prabhupada says, we may think of doing something, but it's not always, we may think of doing something, but it's not always possible for us to do as we like. But when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything happens so wonderfully that one cannot imagine how it is being done. So Krishna doesn't need anybody's help doing it. He doesn't need anybody's company. He doesn't need anybody's help to do something, you see. But Krishna is very happy, just like Prabhupada, I'm sure, was very happy when he saw the devotees had traveled all the way across the country to be at some Ratha Yatra where he was there, you see. And then he's also very happy, you know, with whatever service they're trying to render. It's a reciprocation of love, you see. devotees want to do, be where Krishna is and please Krishna. And Krishna, in return, he wants to be where he wants his devotees around. He wants his devotees around, and he wants to please them. So that's my understanding of how it is that these Nitya Siddhas are here in the material world. Then Prabhupada goes on to say in the purport about how human life is meant for reviving one's eternal relation with the Lord. Okay, we know that. And all religious injunctions are meant for awakening this dormant instinct of the living entity. Okay, so I'd like to say something about that, which is that it's very important. You know, we've heard that many, many times. We know it. But it's very important to keep this in the forefront of our mind that, you know, that all religious injunctions, and that's everything we're doing, is meant for awakening this dormant instinct of the living entity. The dormant instinct is your love for Krishna, our love for Krishna. Nichiksita Krishna Prema Sabu Kabanaya Shravanadi Sude Chitte Korudada. The pure love for Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity, and it's awakened by the process of devotional service, primarily hearing and chanting. So that's it's the goal. And it's very important to keep the goal in sight. You see, because when you lose sight of the goal, then all sorts of discrepancies creep in. Is that the word I'm looking for? Anomalies. You know, there's an expression in here in America. I don't know if it's, I think it's in English language in general. You can't see the forest for the trees. See, and that's referring to a person who, it's used to describe a person, someone who's so absorbed in the details of a situation that he can't see he can't see the situation as a whole. See, so that's what happens when you lose sight of the goal. You kind of get caught up in the details, and that could be, you know, creates problems. And I'll give you an example. Like in Krishna consciousness, how we apply this is that, you know, when we forget that, well, you know, we're here to develop our love for Krishna, right? And we start, you know, operating with some other motive, then we're going to get some other result. Like another expression I'm fond of, I guess they call them, not proverbs, whatever, expressions, sayings. You reap what you sow. Did I get that right? Yeah, you reap what you sow. In other words, if you're engaging in your service and your, you know, activities with in a mood of like imagined condescension based on an imagined feelings of superiority, if you're sowing that, and so, if you're sowing that, that's what you're going to reap. And those whatever kind of attitude you're putting out there, you know, into the association of the devotees, whatever, intolerance or condescension or arrogance or whatever, you know, that's what's going to come back. You see? So that's what we have to keep the goal. The goal is we're here to reawaken our dormant love for Krishna. So we have to try to remember that, be mindful of that, and conduct ourselves in such a way that's going to be conducive to that, you know, developing, realizing that goal, okay? And Prabhupada, you know, made this point. He said you have to try to see the serving side of the devotees. What that means is we have to cultivate, practice learning how to appreciate the devotees, their devotional qualities. That's a very, you know, important inner discipline. And even like there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Vijivanaya Sampane Brahmani Gavihastini, talks about how the humble sage, he sees with equal vision the learned and gentle Brahmin, the dog, the cow, the dog, eat it like that. That means he's seeing the potential. He's seeing that person in terms of their potential to be engaged, or that living entity, in terms of their potential to be engaged in devotional service. See? In other words, we have to practice not seeing in the bodily conception of life, not seeing, oh, this person is good looking, or this person's ugly, this person's smart, this person's stupid, this person's rich, this person's poor, this person's fat, this person. No. And then, you know, acting accordingly. Try not to get hung up on those things. That's the external. You know, Prabhupada's instructions, see the serving side. Try to, you know, get to cultivate that mentality of appreciating the devotion, you know, what the service attitude of that person. Prabhupada refers to it in a different way here at the end of this purpose, is the aptitude for service. Cultivate appreciating the aptitude of service that you see in other people, and not the material qualities. Okay, so that's on that point. Prabhupada says, the sooner this awakening is brought about, the quicker the mission of the human life is fulfilled. Well, once again, making a little analogy here. So, yeah, the sooner that awakening is brought about, the sooner we develop that type of mentality and thinking, then the quicker the mission of the human life is fulfilled, but the quicker the mission of the Krishna conscious movement will be fulfilled. See? It's valid. That point is valid on a personal individual level, and also on a larger scale. That's what'll make our movement successful. Being able to interact like that. And okay. It says, a soul who is already advanced in devotional service has the opportunity to take birth in such an enlightened family. So,
once again,
seeing this is further furthering the analogy that people who get to come to the temple, people who get to join the Krishna conscious movement, they're souls who are possibly already advanced. Either they're advanced as a result of things they did in their past lifetime, or as Prabhupada, and that's what Prabhupada indicates in this purport, Suchinam Srimantam Gehe Yoga Brashta Vajayate. And there also is another possible way in which they have become, advanced or fortunate. And I'll describe that by relating an anecdote something that took place. I don't know what year. I can't remember what year. But Prabhupada was on a walk with some devotees, and one devotee started raising this point. He said, Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, text 28, that only those who have engaged in pious activities in this life and in previous lives and whose sinful activities are completely eradicated. And Prabhupada knew where he was going with that. So Prabhupada interrupted him and said, actually, I've created you a good fortune. He was trying to say that, he was about to ask Prabhupada, does that mean that, we, your devotees, your disciples, have engaged in pious activities in this life and previous lives and our sinful activities are completely eradicated? Prabhupada cut him off and said, I've created your good fortune. So whether it's as a result of past activities or just, Prabhupada's causeless mercy, here we are in the Krishna conscious movement, and we got a great opportunity, to advance in spiritual life. And as Prabhupada says here, the quicker fulfill the mission of the human form of life, by being a member of the Krishna conscious movement. And then finally, Prabhupada in the purport here, in the last part of the purport, he talks about how not only did Uddhava have this opportunity, he gives a couple other examples of people who had this opportunity. Well, one or two other examples. Actually, one happens to be himself. The other one, Maharaj Prickett, had a similar opportunity to Uddhava. And then Prabhupada mentions himself as an example of somebody who had the opportunity. He says, by the grace of the Lord, we were given the same opportunity by our parents, and the beginning of our life was based on this principle. So I'm going to read everybody from, I did a little research on that, and I did find some things where Prabhupada talks about that, his opportunity. If I can get this, here we go. So this is in chronological order now. You'll be hearing this. It starts off, this is Prabhupada's first memory of his opportunity, and he's probably about 2 or 3 years old here, because the next one is he's 4 years old, so he's younger than the first one. It says, I can remember standing at the doorway of Radha Govinda Temple, saying prayers to Radha Govinda Murti. Well, I don't know about 2 or 3, because he's saying prayers, but he was young, because, as I said, the other ones, I've got this from the Lilamrita, and it was being presented as if it was in chronological order. So I'm assuming that he was younger in this one than the next one, which says he was around 4 or something. So anyway, the deity was so beautiful with his slanted eyes That was one. So Prabhupada was, you know, right from a very, very young age. Actually, in a previous paragraph, he was describing how his caretaker, who was nanny or nurse or something, had pushed him there in a little, like a pram, with another boy, a friend of his, and they would always go together. So he was very young. He wasn't walking on his own. He was being pushed there in a pram, and there he was standing for hours. Well, that's coming. He was standing there looking at the deity, appreciating how beautiful it was for hours together. And then the next one. My father would rise a little late, around 7 or 8. Then after taking bath, he would go purchasing. Then from 10 o'clock to 1 in the afternoon, he was engaged in puja. Then he would take his lunch and go to his business. In the business shop, he would take a little rest for 1 hour. He would come home from his business at 10 o'clock at night, and then again he would do puja. Actually, his real business was puja. For livelihood, he did some business, but puja was his main business. We would be sleeping, and father would be doing arti. Ding, ding, ding. We would hear the bell and wake up and see him bowing down before Krishna. So Prabhupada had a great role model, his father. You know, that's what he remembers about his father. His father was a serious devotee, that he was, you know, doing puja twice a day in a very serious way. And, you know, Prabhupada was aware of that and was inspired by that. So then it goes on. Now he's 6 years old. It says, when Abai was about 6 years old, he asked his father for a deity of his own to worship. Like what was described here in this, you know, purport is referred. Here in the purport it's referred to dolls, but, you know, Prabhupada asked for a deity of his own to worship. Since infancy, he had watched his father doing puja at home. See, so it had its effect. And had been regularly seeing the worship of Radha Govinda and thinking, when will I be able to worship Krishna like this? On Abai's request, his father purchased a pair of little Radha Krishna deities and gave them to him. From then on, whenever Abai ate, he would first offer to Radha and Krishna, and imitating his father and the priests of Radha Govinda, he would offer his deities a ghee lamp and put them to rest at night. Okay, so, once again, perfect example. It goes on to say, I think this is the last one. Yeah, no, second one. Abai and his sister, Bhavatarini, became dedicated worshippers of the little Radha Krishna deities, spending much of their time dressing and worshipping them, and sometimes singing bhajans. Their brothers and sisters laughed, teasing Abai and Bhavatarini, by saying that because they were more interested in the deity than in their education, they would not live long. But Abai replied that they didn't care. So they're both serious devotees, him and his sister, from a very young age, you can see like from here. And then it goes on, he had to abandon worshiping the Krishna deity he had demanded his father give him years before. He had retired his deities to a closed box. This is referring when he started at the Scottish Church, what is it, Scottish Church's College. You know, he was older by this point, and I guess it just was too much to be a full-time student with all those responsibilities he had then and do his deity worship. So he, as it says, he retired the deities to a closed box. But, it goes on to say, one night after his first year of college, so some time passed, but one night after his first year of college, Abai had an unusual dream. The deity of Krishna, his father had given him, appeared to Abai, complaining, why have you put me away in this box? You should take me out and worship me again. That was the dream. So then it says, Abai felt sorry that he had neglected his deity, and he resumed his worship of Radha and Krishna at home, despite his assignments. So that's, you know, Prabhupada's start in life. And he's, as I said, one of the, a great example of a Nityasiddha, who, by Krishna's arrangement, as he says here, by the grace of the Lord, was given the opportunity to resume his devotional service or continue his devotional service even at a very early age. So in this way Prabhupada uses this phrase here, as I mentioned earlier, so that one may develop the aptitude of service. So Prabhupada had that opportunity to develop the aptitude of service. But now one may ask, well, wait. Prabhupada's in Nityasiddha, right? So where's the question of developing an aptitude of service? He's already got it. You know, if you're a Nityasiddha, you already have an aptitude of service. Now, how do we understand this, the achievements of a Nityasiddha in the material world? And I'm going to take a shot at answering that question, and maybe somebody might have a better answer than what I'm about to give, but this is what I came up with. That, you ever heard that expression, like a born athlete? Or this person's a born athlete, or that person's a born singer, a born musician, or born this, or born that. Okay, yeah, that might be the case, you know? But still, they got to work at it. You see, you could say, like, okay, Kobe Bryant was a born athlete. You know, he was a born. Yeah, but he worked like anything to get as good as he was, you see? So you can't just go, oh, no. You know, you can't discredit the person saying, like, if somebody's saying, well, he did this. Yeah, but he was a born athlete. Yeah, but he was. He had natural talent and ability, but he worked at it like anything. See, so in the same way with Prabhupada and these Nichisiddha devotees, sure, yeah, they're born great devotees, but they work at it. You know, it's not like they're just, Prabhupada wasn't pretending to perform austerities and tapasya. He was doing it for real. You see, he was a great devotee. So you can't take anything away from Prabhupada just by saying, oh, but he was a Nichisiddha, or any other Nichisiddha for that matter. No. You know, it's true. They have some, initial or talent, ability, gift like that, blessing, but they work at it like anything at the same time to develop that and do something glorious to serve the Lord. And such was the case with Prabhupada and Jiva Goswami and, Maharaj Purkhit and Uddhava for that matter. So that's my understanding of, the position of a Nichisiddha. It's, you can't, as I said, they're Nichisiddhas, sure, but they also get credit for whatever they achieve in this world and not just, you can't just say, well, that's because that's so-and-so is a Nichisiddha. No. It's like, anyway, I made the example already. It's an achievement. It's a genuine achievement. Okay, there was one additional thing on this point about how, the sooner the devotees, get the right mentality, and he says, Prabhupada said, the quicker the mission of the human life would be fulfilled, and I was making that analogy, the quicker the mission of the Krishna conscious movement will be fulfilled. You know, when devotees are interacting with each other in the right right consciousness. I found the paragraph that I think where Prabhupada really says something, addresses that point, and I'll just share it with everybody. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhulila, chapter 4, text 79. Prabhupada says, if the preachers in our Krishna conscious movement are sincere devotees of Krishna, Krishna will always be with them because he is very kind and favorable to all his devotees. Just as Arjuna and Krishna were victorious in the battle of Kurukshetra, this Krishna consciousness movement will surely emerge victorious if we but remain sincere devotees of the Lord and serve the Lord according to the advice of the predecessors, in parentheses, the six Goswamis and other devotees of the Lord. Then he goes to say, and this is the part that I found really interesting. He said, Prabhupada says, within this society, capital S, we must try to serve the predecessors by preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult and spreading his name and fame all over the world. If we attempt this seriously within, once again, capital S, society, it will be successfully done. There is no question of estimating how this will happen in the mundane sense, but without a doubt, it happens by the grace of Krishna. So before I make my point, I'm going to bring in one other reference. In the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's one passage where Prabhupada says, the pure devotees, is always thinking about how to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. And Krishna, being pleased by his attitude, he enlightens the general populace from within by his causeless mercy. See, so it's happening. It happens, but it's happening as the cause of it is Krishna's reciprocating with the sincerity of that pure devotee who's desiring to deliver the conditioned souls. So that's why they get enlightened from within by his causeless mercy. So I think Prabhupada's saying something similar here. I think that the society he's referring to is the Krishna conscious society, capital S, Krishna conscious society, not just human society in general. This is my thesis, okay? And I think basically the point he's making here is that when devotees in the society, the Krishna conscious society, try to serve the predecessors by preaching the cult and they interact with each other in the right way, then, Lord Chaitanya, Krishna are pleased. And what happens is, as I said, it will be successfully done. You see, you get the blessings. we're like the, you know, the little children, and when the parent is pleased by the way the little children are playing, they're rewarded. See, Krishna, when he sees that the devotees are sincerely doing things nicely, you know, associating with each other according to the guidelines that have been given to us by our spiritual masters, predecessor acharyas, then Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, is pleased, and they'll bless us. They benedict us by the movement it flourishes, it becomes successful. That's my understanding of this paragraph. That's what I think it means. If we attempt this seriously within the society, you know, preaching and doing what we're doing, exactly what we're doing here every morning, every day, then Prabhupada says it will be successfully done. There's no question of estimating how this will happen in a mundane sense. Just like sometimes, you know, I've heard Savas make this point, that we distribute a lot of books, and it's not necessarily the same people that get the books that come and become devotees. You know, like we make our efforts to distribute the books and preach, and then different people come. Well, how do you understand that? Well, my understanding is, once again, it's a super soul. Krishna is reciprocating not like on a one-to-one mechanical way with the actual effort or activity, but Krishna can understand, oh, these devotees, they're very sincere now about preaching. They're going out and they're distributing so many books. And then some people come, some new souls come and show an interest in Krishna consciousness. Not necessarily the same people who've got the books, but it's Krishna reciprocating with the devotees. Okay? So just like in that passage I meant from the fourth canto on this thing, I think it's saying the same thing. There's no question of estimating how this will happen in a mundane sense, but without a doubt it happens by the grace of Krishna. See, so when Krishna is pleased by our cooperative efforts to engage in devotional service, you know, when he sees devotees are cooperating with each other and trying to associate nicely and appreciate the serving side of each other, etc., Krishna is pleased. And that pleasure will be expressed by the movement will flourish. People will come. More people show interest. More people will participate, etc., etc. So, anyway, that's what I have to say about this verse in purport. Does anybody have any questions? David Ratha Babu. Yeah. Comment. Questions first, please. If anybody has any question, we'll do questions first and then comment second. Yeah, question? Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. In the example given about Pariksit Maharaj playing with dolls, and similarly, Prabhupada also mentions that he himself, and there is a precedent in that. There is a precedent already, like something that happened long time ago, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it comes natural, right? So in my understanding, I'm trying to figure out this, that Uddhava has the same age as Krishna, practically speaking. They're cousins. They were born in the, you know, let's say in the same place. And he's a baby. So he's playing the doll of Krishna already, like, I try to understand this. Is he already, like, thinking that he's God or that he's worshipable? Because from the material point of view, it looks like they're cousins, the same age. Who told him that he was God himself?
Does it specifically say that he was playing with a Krishna doll? Yeah, he used to play with dolls in the form of Krishna. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I mean, Krishna's been around for a long time. I'm trying to think of a reference where, you know, from something else Prabhupada said, which would help us understand that, how he's worshiping a doll of Krishna. And as you said, it's just Krishna's just getting started at that point. They're about the same age, so. But I think I remember reading something in the Krishna book, but I just can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe somebody remembers more clearly. Yeah, go ahead.
So
all the incarnations of Krishna are mentioned in the Shastra previous to him actually appearing. So, you know, even if like a form of...
Yeah, just take the thing.
If it's like it's like if, let's say, the Kalki incarnation is coming. So, and like one of Kalki's devotees is on the planet and his parents are having him play with a Kalki doll. It's not so bewildering because the Shastra says that Kalki is going to appear.
Okay. I got your point. That might be the explanation.
And through, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, through the transcendental system, it could just be arranged that Uddhava, because his Ishtadev is Krishna, Super Soul makes an arrangement where his parents give him a Krishna doll. But it's all the incarnations are mentioned in the Shastra.
Okay. Thank you. Maharaj had a comment, right? Comment? Oh, okay. The point. It's okay. Did you have a comment earlier? Did you want to know? No.
Uddhava. When Uddhava was a little boy, he was not like any ordinary little boy.
Can you hear me better,
yeah,
now?
That's better now?
Is that all right? Okay. We ought to get the volume up too. That would help. So,
so when Uddhava was a little boy, he was not like an ordinary boy. Ordinary boys, you know, they play ball, they play tackle, they play soccer, they do all these kind of things. One of the things that Uddhava did is he made little dolls. And many boys, if they would see a boy making a doll and playing with a doll and looking up at a doll, they would think there's something effeminate about this particular individual. But Uddhava was far above this. He never cared what anybody thought about what he was, what he was not. This is who he knew was Krishna. And all he wanted to do is be reminded of Krishna. He could never get enough of Krishna. And therefore, he made the little dolls of Krishna. And therefore, he became super Krishna conscious and very dear to Lord Krishna. So we can learn a little from Uddhava. And if you're a male, don't put it down to make a doll of Krishna. It's, dolls are not only for girls. Dolls are for boys, too. It's a fact. But boys are too ashamed and too shy. He's a sissy. You know, he's gay. They don't want to hear that. But if you know who you're manufacturing or making or presenting, that this is Krishna, the Supreme Lord, you laugh at them. They don't laugh at you. You get the last laugh, okay? Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Well, we're a little bit old to play with dolls, but we're a little bit old to play with dolls, but I could suggest that, I mean, we could say that, you know, apply that same attitude to deity worship, because to be honest with you, you know, even deity worship might be perceived as something kind of effeminate, or, I mean, it's not like a macho activity, worshiping the deities. So, but, you know, so male devotees shouldn't have that feeling that there's something not masculine about worshiping the deity. That's just, you know, bodily concept of life. It's a totally transcendental activity, and, you know, just if you ever happen to have a thought like that in your mind, just kick it out as being...
Well, Uddhava was transcendental. He never had that problem.
He didn't have that problem.
No.
But in case any of us are having that problem, don't.
Yeah, right. He knew Krishna. And when he knew Krishna, he became totally transcendental.
Right.
And therefore, he had no qualms about playing with a deity like Krishna, putting clothes on him, taking clothes off him, putting shoes on him, talking to him, all these kind of things. We see little girls doing that. Oh, you know, they talk, oh, my little baby, you know, that kind of thing. So, Uddhava never cared about that. And look what he became as he grew up. One of the most magnificent thinkers, feelers, willers, and manifestors of devotional loving service as there was.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have anything they'd like to say? Yeah. Okay, one last question. We can wrap it up.
When the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada about that, you know, if previously we have some pious credit, and Prabhupada said, no, I create your own fortune. First of all, I accept totally that question, totally. My question will be that, what will be the attitude of devotees reading when you go in different statements, for example, when Queen Devahuti was telling that famous verse that, you know, that you already been. Oh, what is that?
Yeah.
Devotees that keep the holy name the tip of their tongues. It is understood that this devotee already did pilgrimage. He already take bath in holy places. He read the scriptures. He knows everything. So therefore, yeah, not surprisingly. And similarly, in the Nectar of Devotion, also we hear that Srila Rupa Goswami says that, right. Yeah, you know, anyone who comes and joins, it is there. So the point is that I'm making is that we believe in that statement, definitely. What Prabhupada says for us is like worshipable and take it to heart. At the same time, you have statements from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from Nectar of Devotion, like that. And what will be the attitude of devotees reading that? You just like, okay. At least for myself, I said, yes, what Prabhupada says, it fits me totally. But at the same time, you have the scriptures there, you're going to say, oh, that might not be true. So,
right.
What
so if I'm understanding your question correctly, the question is, you could definitely make a case for that devotees did have previous activities. There is some pious or background to be coming in contact with devotional service. And you mentioned Rupa Goswami and the Nectar Devotion in that verse by Devahuti. How do we reconcile the apparently contradictory statements that Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune and these other things? Don't know. I don't know off the top of my head what the explanation for that would be. But I would say that I wouldn't get upset by just, they're valid. Both are valid. And I have to think about it a little bit more or ask Archituru Karma, somebody like that, to understand how that is okay. But I'm sure it is okay, but I just can't think of the explanation right off the top of my head. Anybody? So we'll put that one, we'll end with that, and we'll come back and get you the answer at a later date. Thank you. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Said that.